Accession number 22586, Reel 2.
Arthur Featherstone, Reel 2. So, did you make a full recovery from your burns?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yeah.
How did they treat those?
I don't know, actually. But all the skin came off my legs and whatnot. And, but I don't know what kind of treatment was used. But it was obviously successful, because I recovered from it. It was all right then. And while we were at Algiers, that was the first and only charge I was ever on in all the years I served in the army. We were called on parade, which we paraded every morning, early. Inspecting officer said, "Featherstone, haven't you shaved?" I said, "No, sir. Haven't started yet." "Well, it's time you did." So I was up before the commanding officer, and I got 3 days pack drill. And that taught me a lesson.
What lesson did it teach you?
Because 3 days pack drill involved running all the time. And pack drill meant with full pack. And you were up and over the sand dunes. And if you endured 3 days of that, you never committed an offence again, if it was possible.
What should you have said?
Which I didn't.
What should you have said to this officer?
It isn't what I should have said. It's what I should have done. I should have shaved before I went on parade.
But you said you didn't have any stubble anyway.
To me, no, I didn't have any. But obviously he noticed I had. So that was the only charge I was ever on in the army, and I avoided it in future. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel resentful about the punishment?
Pardon?
Did you resent the punishment?
Not really, no, because obviously I was guilty of the offence, and it just taught me a lesson not to do it again. And I remember going on patrol whilst in North Africa. Obviously, we were progressing towards Tunis by this time. And I remember going on patrol in an armoured car, and somehow or other, we hadn't navigated properly, and we ended up through the German lines. Through the German forward lines. And we came to an Arab village, and they were very sympathetic towards us by this time, because they didn't like the Germans any more than we did. So they volunteered to camouflage our armoured vehicle and the crew. And they dressed us in Arab flowing robes. And we endured that for at least 3 days. And they looked after us. And the Germans never knew that we were concealed in this Arab village. And by this time, our forces had persuaded the Germans to retreat. And we were able to report back to our own lines. That was an incident I don't remember quite clearly.
Did you feel anxious when you were with these Arabs?
Of course, yes. Anxious because obviously, we realised what the punishment would have been if we'd been caught. because there wasn't such a thing. And you could not be treated as a prisoner of war when you weren't in uniform, to start with.
Why did you not have uniforms? Oh, because the Arabs
dressed. Of course, we were Arab dressed to be camouflaged. And that's the sort of thing we did.
Yeah. What did you feed on whilst you were behind enemy lines?
Coffee and eggs and whatnot. We used to trade coffee for eggs, and the Arabs call them Efs, E-R-F-S, Efs, and we traded them for coffee, and we obviously, in the armoured car, we're pretty well stocked up with rations, and we were able to survive, as I say, at least 3 days, it was 2 or 3 days we were there.
Did the Arabs tell you why they didn't like the Germans?
Oh, well, no, because I think... no, they didn't actually say no. But they disliked the Germans and they were sympathetic to us. So I know. So, eventually, we arrived at Tunis and a place called Bizerta. And from there... we sailed to Naples.
Did the Derbyshire Yeomanry have tanks by now?
Pardon? No. They hadn't got tanks by then. We're still on armoured cars. Until we arrived in Italy. This is the first connection I had with tanks anyway. As far as I'm aware, the Derbyshire Yeomanry didn't have tanks at that time. But the first time I came in contact with tanks in the Derbyshire Yeomanry, there were Sherman tanks and part of the 6th Armoured Division, which included the 17th, 21st Lancers, 16th, 5th Lancers, and so on. And then we progressed all the way up Italy until...
What was it like in Naples when you arrived?
Oh, it was quite... We were enemy, of course. By this time, the Italians hadn't given up and changed sides to the British. And you had to be very wary, of course. But by this time, the 8th Army had already cleared Naples and they were progressing north. So it was quite safe for us to... Because it would be... either 43 or 44 by the time we landed in Naples, you see. By this time, the 8th Army had done the deed and defeated the enemy on the way up.
Was there much damage in Naples?
Oh, quite a lot, yes. Oh, yeah, a lot of destruction. Yeah.
How did you get on with the Italians in Naples?
Oh, quite not too bad, really. Of course, they were a bit belligerent because... we were still the enemy then. They hadn't gone over. But we survived and they'd been defeated by that time, by the 8th Army. And they'd done a good job, really. And we ended up at Cassino. Mount Cassino. And we were stuck there for several weeks or more. Because obviously, up in Mount Cassino, the Germans had thousands and thousands of troops, and they could defend it from any angle because it was on top of a mountain. And there was the Australians and Canadians all lying dead on the mountainside in their hundreds because the Germans could just wipe anybody out who went along, you see. But we were well camouflaged and we were out of the way. And we endured that for a bit. And by this time, it's bad weather in Italy. And in Italy, in wintertime, it can really be bad. Especially in the mountain passes or whatnot.
Were you still doing your donor job?
Oh, yeah.
Were there many casualties being taken by your unit at Casino?
No, because we were just sat there, apparently, until it was safe to move on. And, of course, the 8th Army are doing the best then. And we eventually arrived at a village called Antella, just outside Florence, and we were given accommodation with the local residents there. And we loved it. By this time, I'd progressed to acting Lance Sergeant, 3 stripes.
So the villagers welcomed you?
Oh, yes, yes. By this time, the Italians had come over to the British. And they told me that Mussolini and his girlfriend had been strung up in a village square, and I think, but I'm not sure, that we were in the vicinity at the time, but I wouldn't like to say that's the truth, because I'm not sure about that, and they were strung up at the time, and as soon as they give up, they obviously turned on him. And we enjoyed our stay there at Antella, quite near Florence.
Why was it so enjoyable?
Well, because we lived with the local residents, and they made us welcome. Yeah.
Did you exchange things with them?
Oh, all sorts of things, yes. You helped them as much as they helped you. And the way they made us comfortable, especially in winter time in Italy, in the beds they had what they called scaldinis, which was an open container with hot ashes in, and that kept the bed warm. They called them scaldinis. And we really enjoyed that, the way they looked after us. And we put on various entertainments for the local people in the village halls and whatnot. I have a photograph, actually, of all the sergeants getting together and delivering various goods to these children in the village hall.
What goods were there?
We enjoyed it. Anything that we got in the rations, such as chocolates and things like that, biscuits and chocolates and whatnot. And they really appreciated it, because there was such a shortage in those days of anything like that.
Do you mean you put on performances?
Well, no, we put on dances and things like that. And it was my duty, we shared the duties between us, but it was my duty to sprinkle talcum powder on the dance floor before the dances started. And that helped people to dance easily.
To prevent people slipping, you mean?
Oh, it made them slip more, yes, but it made it easier dancing, yeah. That's the first I knew about having talcum powder on the dance floor. And
did any of the soldiers marry any of the Italians?
Not that I'm aware of. There was quite a few got to know the Italian ladies, like, because obviously their boyfriends and husbands were away. They're either being taken prisoner or they were away on duty somewhere. And we finished up in Austria. Oh, but previous to that, I was given 4 days' leave on Lake Trasimeno, an island in the middle of Lake Trasimeno. We had sort of a recuperation camp there, and I was given 4 days' leave there. We enjoyed that very much. Of course, there's everything going for it, eh? And We eventually finished up in Austria, Klagenfurt. And
had you had any narrow escapes in Italy from enemy action?
Yes, I was. Whether that was in Italy or Africa, I'm absolutely not sure. I was dispatch riding, and we had to ride ahead of the convoy of tanks and armoured cars, and the next crossroads, we had to stand and direct the convoy from there, right, left, or straight ahead. And I was stood there with I think he was a Canadian soldier. He had something to do with it. And suddenly there was a shell came over, and we were both struck by the fragments of it. And what is a coincidence is that we both ended up in adjacent beds in hospital. And the last sighting I had of him before he went to hospital was his battle dress blouse was filled with blood, and it'd been with shrapnel gone straight across his chest, and he had a deep groove straight across his chest, and I got shrapnel in the groin, and it was so embarrassing because in hospital the nurses came around and said, they were army nurses of course, Queen Elizabeth, and we've come to dress your wounds. Well, you can't do that. You can't do that. Why? Well, because you're a lady, like, you know. Can't be dressing my wound in the groin, like. Eventually, she persuaded me to let it be done. It was a thing we weren't used to in those days. We got on famously after that. And
did they get the shrapnel out?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. And touch wood, it had no effect whatsoever. And eventually it all healed up and everything. And we were given blue uniform, hospital uniform. And we were taken on a tour of the Vatican in Rome. First time I'd ever seen the Pope in those days, up on his balcony. And we enjoyed that. And of course then we eventually finished in Austria, Klagenfurt, and we were recovering vehicles that had been knocked out and abandoned, and I started riding horses there. Of course, by this time I was a sergeant, the troop sergeant, and we were allowed to do those such things as that, pastimes. And most of the railways in Austria are alongside the roads. There's no edge or anything. And we used to ride the horses alongside the railway line, which was on the road, and try and race the trains. And we enjoyed that very much. And then while we were there, it went up on the notice board that myself and the commanding officer had been mentioned in dispatches. And that's the first I come to know of that, the Oak Leaf, which was awarded me then. And I don't know what it was for. And the wife, you tried to find out, didn't you, what it was for? And you got the documents with it on, didn't you? But they didn't say what it had been awarded for. So, done that. And while we were in Austria, I was awarded a month's leave in 1945, September, to come home and get married. And we travelled overland by coach to England, and I got married on September the 22nd, 1945, at Goole. I had to get special permission from the Pope because the wife was Catholic. And I duly went back there, and I took over the job as squadron quartermaster sergeant, supplying, keeping the food flow going and everything like that. And eventually, my group, Group 27, came up for discharge, and an officer said one day, "Would you care to go in for a commission?" I'd alone thought about it. I thought, well, no, I've got the wife at home and newly married, and that was preferable to being in the army. And so I was duly evacuated to England in 1946. And that was the end of my army career.
Do you think on reflection that that was the right decision, not to accept?
No. I should have given it further thought and possibly taken a commission and stayed on for a pension.
Whilst you were in Austria, in Klagenfurt, how did you get on with the Austrian civilians?
Very well. They were very good. They took us to their heart, you know. They really were very good to us, yeah. Yeah.
What conditions were they living under?
Pretty austere, but they were coping. Yeah. Yeah. There seemed to be plenty of food and everything about them. Of course, they were very good at horticulture, kept themselves supplied with all the necessities.
Whilst you were in Austria, did you see anything of Russians or Yugoslavs?
No.
You didn't see anything of people who had to go back to Russia or Yugoslavia?
No. No, I don't recall anything like that.
No. How do you feel now about having served in the Derbyshire Yeomanry in the Second World War?
Oh, I enjoyed it. Very much so, yeah. You had your bad times and your good times, but on the whole, it was an enjoyable experience.
What were your worst times?
Well, you were a bit depressed at times. Obviously homesick and whatnot. But in the end, it was quite a good experience. I really enjoyed it.
Did they ever form a veterans association after the war, the Derbyshire Yeomanry that you were?
Not that I'm aware of. I was never invited to anything like that, or I even asked about anything like that. That's the only association I've been associated with is Mr. Ball, the First Army.
Did most of the men in the Derbyshire Yeomanry actually come from Derbyshire?
Yes, most of them, yes, yeah. And all their armoured cars were named after each village in Derbyshire.
Such as?
For instance, A Squadron, B Squadron, C Squadron, and so on. And I was actually associated with B Squadron, most of all. And they were all named after the villages, Belper, Buxton, Bradwell, Baslow, and so on. And the A Squadron were named after the A villages. And that was really interesting. We enjoyed that.
I think you had quite an interesting job after the war with a trawler owner.
Oh, yeah.
Can you start telling me again, please?
Yeah. It's unknown.
Yeah.
I obtained a job after coming out of the army with a trawler on it. It was called Sir Basil Parks. And at that time, he hadn't been knighted. He was still Mr. Parks. But eventually, he was knighted and Sir Basil Parks. And I used to go riding with him every morning. And two nice horses. And the horse I rode was called Shannon. And it was the horse that Margaret Lockwood rode in the film Wicked Lady. And one day, Sir Basil came to me and he said, "Arthur," he said, "I think the old fellow's getting tired." It was losing the use of its arthritis in its legs. "You better take him to Beverly." I knew what that meant. It was the end of his days. I took him to the fellmonger at Beverly, who was called Mr. Wiles, and I had to wait and bring a hoof back, which I understand was mounted in silver by Lady Parks, and which I assume the family have still got.
So he was put down, was he?
But that was agonising, to watch the poor old fellow being humanely killed and wait to bring its hoof back again. But after that, we're on the way to Southampton to pick up Sir Basil. He was coming home from Canada, and I decided by this time that it wasn't the life for me. Low wage and portion of fish every week, and that was a lot. So I decided that I'd had enough. So we'd left North Ferriby, progressing towards the A1, and we got to Newport, the other side of Brough, and I said, "Excuse me, lady." "Yes, Arthur. I've decided to give my notice in." "Oh, you have you? Turn the car out." Which I duly did. Came back to Ferriby and parked the car in the drive, and and that was me. I duly worked 7 days' notice and left there. But before then, I was instructed to return my uniform for inspection by Sir Basil, to see if it was in the condition. Of course, it was obtained from Moss Bros, and to see if it was in the same condition as when I'd obtained it, which it was. I'd looked after it. Silk shirts and lot. And, of course, after serving my 7 days' notice, I was out of work. I duly went along to the notorious Kappa Pass.
This is a non-ferrous metals factory.
Yeah. And I said, "Oh, yes, yes, yes. You can come and work here. Well, I must warn you that if we don't like you and you don't like us, 36 hours notice will suffice. Either way." I'd 10 days there. I didn't like it. Filthy. Couldn't stand I went to a bath every day either. So, I had a friend who was in the Territorial Army with me across the road, Mr. Tomlinson, and he was employed as a driver at Mr. Freeman's at Brough. I would duly went along to him and said, "Any chance of a job, Jack?" "Oh, I'll ask for you," which he duly did. "Can you go and see Mr. Freeman?" Came back. "Of course I can." Had enough there. I went along, he says, "When can you start?" He knew I'd obtained an HGV in the army. So, I think this was on the Wednesday. Or Tuesday. And I came back. I said, I can start Thursday morning. That's after my 36 hours notice given to Copper Pass. Right. And it was real broad Yorkshire's. Old gentleman Freeman, T.H. Freeman, Thomas Henry. I reported for work on the Thursday morning, and he said, Thursday wagon, make after it. Which I did, and from then on I was with them 14 years.